This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Yesterday, hundreds of contract doctors nationwide staged a walkout in the morning to demand job security and better career opportunities that their peers who hold permanent positions have. The doctors walked out of the hospitals for about half an hour or so after ensuring that their responsibilities had been handed over to other doctors, and they later then returned to their workstations when the walkout was over. Now, this came after weeks of planning. And amidst last-minute uncertainties over whether it was going to happen, after Putrajaya had announced last Friday that contracts would be extended for doctors, dentists and pharmacists for at least 2 years or a maximum of 4 years if the contract doctor was already specialising. Now, the announcement also included benefits and specialisation opportunities for these doctors, which are on par with what their colleagues with permanent positions are able to enjoy. However, the collective of contract doctors, Hartel Doctor Contract, who organized the walkout, had described the solutions as quote-unquote half-cooked and went ahead with the Hartel, with the walkout, as we saw yesterday. So the question now is, what is a feasible solution to ensure that our junior contract doctors have a future in our healthcare system? And if not enough is done to address this, how will this affect our healthcare system in the long run? Here to help us answer those questions is independent health policy specialist Dr. Kaur Swee King. Thanks for joining me today, Swee King. Let's address the Hartel that happened yesterday, where we saw contract doctors from government hospitals across the country walking out in the morning to highlight their demands for permanent employment and better job security, like I mentioned. What do you think the walkouts achieved, and what do the walkouts signify to us?
Well, Sue Ann, the first thing is that it's too early to see what these walkouts have achieved, because we have to really look at what the government response would be to the walkouts. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we hope that the government will respond in very compassionate and kind and professional ways. Instead of police reports or arrests or any unnecessary or inappropriately heavy disciplinary action, so the government can demonstrate a lot of goodwill and compassion if they were to respond to this, not as a show of insubordination. No, it's not. It's actually just, shall we say, a discussion, an employment discussion for terms of service between the employees, in this case, the doctors, and the employers, in this case, the government. So all that is to say, it's probably too early to tell what outcomes the walkouts would be. But already, perhaps we can see that there are some takeaways and some observations. The first observation is that the working conditions for our health professionals, so not just doctors, yeah, but for nurses, pharmacists, dentists, medical assistants, and so on, are probably not in a good place for Malaysia. To the extent that the doctors are at their physical, emotional, psychological, maybe even financial limits, therefore causing them to strike. A strike is not an easy decision. And anybody who chooses to strike with all the apparatus of the state arrayed against them takes a very courageous decision and probably signals to us that something is wrong in the system. This is one key observation. The second key observation is the strike is a long time coming. They don't happen overnight. They happen because pressure builds up over a period of years, in this case, 5 years. And short-term solutions for a long-term problem of human resource management or human capital management for health in Malaysia, the size of the civil service and its contrast to the underfunded, understaffed health ministry. And thirdly, how do we manage medical schools and the influx of doctors created when we liberalize the medical schools around Malaysia? So this is the second key observation from the strike today, that it didn't build up overnight, but it built up over years and decades. Therefore, short-term concessions are not enough and long-term solutions are what's needed at the moment.
Mm. So then, speaking of concessions and solutions, you know, last Friday, we saw that the government had announced several solutions, and this included extending the contracts for contract healthcare workers. This includes doctors, dentists and pharmacists. They also announced added benefits for contract doctors that are on par with what their peers who are permanent staff enjoy. Are those then short or long-term solutions to the situation that we're facing now?
Short answer to that, Sue Ann, is probably yes and no. they are useful and meaningful concessions, and they go some already a large distance in solving some of those problems. For example, a contract doctor has to pay for their own flight ticket from Peninsula to Sabah and Sarawak if they are posted to Sabah and Sarawak, mm-hmm. whereas a permanent doctor gets a flight ticket paid for by the government whenever they're being posted. So that is one example of an inequality that has existed for about 5 years, but was corrected 3 or 4 days ago, last Friday on the 23rd of July. So that's one example. But in some situations, it should also go further. Here's one example. On the 23rd of in the 23rd of July announcement, it was stated that contract doctors will now receive a 4-year extension, which is great. But when you consider that master's programs give you 4, maybe even 7 years to complete it, then there's a disconnect. So one way to resolve this is potentially to provide a 10-year contract for doctors instead of merely a 4-year maximum extension. So in other words, instead of 4-year max, it should be minimum 10 years. And that's just one possible example of a solution that's more durable and long-term. I'll end my comments for this question, Sue, by going to an ultra-long-term situation, mm-hmm. Or rather a challenge facing the health ministry in Malaysia. The health ministry has 270,000 employees. They have 52,000 doctors and X number of nurses, Y number of pharmacists, and Z number of dentists. The creation of these posts requires a conversation between the health ministry, who usually proposes a large number, and that number that is consistent with the healthcare needs of Malaysia, but that number is usually reduced after conversations with the Ministry of Finance or the Public Service Department. So the one long-term structural solution needs to be had is the hiring, firing, promoting, and retention of healthcare professionals probably needs to be situated within the health ministry instead of a sister agency like the public service department.
Now, if we look at, just to touch a bit more on that specialization aspect, right, because that has been one of the main concerns that a lot of contract doctors have. Now, you mentioned that it requires a minimum of 4 years, 4 to 7 years of before they can specialize. So is the extension of 4 years enough at all if you know, some of them were to attempt to specialize?
Mm-hmm. Short answer, Sue, no, it's not. Whenever there are many outlier examples, so we should not try to address them in our conversation right now, Sue, mm-hmm. but when we look at the bulk of the situation with 23,000 contract doctors at the moment, let's assume half of them want to specialize. And Malaysia does need more specialists because Malaysia's number of specialists, right, is only one third that of the OECD or countries in Europe, their average number of specialists. So there is a place for more specialists in Malaysia. Let's assume that half these doctors, the 23,000 contract doctors, want to specialize. They're now faced with a situation where their contracts maximum of 4 years. When we say maximum, right, there's every possibility that they could be offered a 1 or 2 year contract. So it's just only a maximum of 4 years. That doesn't mean automatic 4 years for everyone. So that's one challenge. And the second challenge after that is the master's program gives you, say, 4 to 7 years. And this depends on the master's course. This depends on the faculty. This depends on the university. So I'm giving a bit of a range. If you take 6 years, and some people do take 6 years to finish their master's, this means that at the end of 4 years, even assuming they got a 4-year extension that maxes them out, the final 2 years of their master's training is essentially uncontracted. And this provides a lot of uncertainty, job insecurity to the doctors. And obviously, there will be, some emotional and psychological, distress as well.
All right, let's go for a quick break now. I'm speaking to independent health policy specialist Dr. Kosi Keng about the walkouts by contract doctors that happened in hospitals nationwide yesterday and whether the solutions offered by the government last Friday, which included extensions of their contracts, are sufficient to provide job security for our doctors. We'll continue our conversation to look at what are some feasible and viable solutions that can be implemented after a few quick messages. Keep it here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lim Suan, and on the show with me today is Dr. Kosi Keng, an independent health policy specialist. We're discussing the hartal, or the walkouts that happened yesterday, as well as what solutions can be offered to better address the contract system that our young doctors are facing. Suikeng, looking at what the demands of the Hartzell organizers were, they said that the reason they proceeded with the strike was because the solutions offered by Putrajaya last Friday were quote-unquote half-cooked, as it did not address their main demands, which are permanent positions for all contract doctors, as well as transparency in the criteria for selection of permanent posts. Now, my question then is, are these demands, especially offering permanent posts for all contract doctors, feasible? If we look at it from, one, the perspective of whether our healthcare system has the capacity to continuously offer permanent posts, and two, whether we can financially afford that.
So, and I'll do the easy question first, okay, before going to the tougher one. So the easy question is, they're asking for two things. One is permanent posts, which I'll talk about, and they're asking for transparency for data for who gets permanent posts. Transparency is something we can support. At the moment, only 700 or so doctors have received permanent posts out of 23,000 doctors. The criteria on paper is not always transparent. And even if it's transparent, perhaps may not be applied very consistently or fairly. So that's one challenge that we need to overcome, transparency of criteria. However, there is a bit of a disconnect. Their first demand is all permanent posts. And the second demand is transparency for criteria.
Yes.
So if you meet the first demand, you don't need the second demand, right? So let me set that aside and move to talk about permanent posts. It's a peculiarity that among all the ministries in Malaysia, only the Ministry of Health, this is to the best of my knowledge, and I'm happy to be corrected, only the Ministry of Health professionals have contracts. Every other ministry has got permanent posts. So on one hand, we can't say that we want to introduce contract posts to slim down the civil service, to trim it so it's less bloated. And on the other, say that the health ministry is underfunded and understaffed. So if it's true, both cannot be true at the same time. So if it's true that the health ministry is underfunded and understaffed, then we need to increase the permanent posts, because you will need us to have more doctors caring for a population that's larger, older, sicker, especially during COVID. So the government must resolve an internal contradiction. You can't on one hand say we're going to trim the civil service and introduce contracts, but only introduce it for the health ministry, because that would be unfair. And at the same time, the second internal contradiction for the government would be you can't say that the Ministry of Health is understaffed, and this is the Auditor General who said that in 2018, and still not give them more permanent posts. So these internal contradictions have to be resolved. Now, your second part of the question is whether or not we can afford to make doctors permanent. Short answer is yes, but it requires a lot of political will, and it requires some careful rebalancing of our Ministry of Health funding. However, an interesting fact, Suan, just to make it more balanced, right, is that the Ministry of Health today spends about 55-60% of their annual budget on salaries alone. So we, while it's true that Malaysia needs more doctors and we need more permanent posts for more doctors, we must also perhaps fund the Ministry of Health better. Because if 50-60% right, of your Ministry of Health funding goes towards paying salaries, that's only 40-45% going towards purchasing drugs, maintaining ambulances, and paying for electricity bills at the hospitals. So more funding needs to go into the health ministry. A good interim solution could be more permanent posts rather than all permanent posts, and having the right mix between permanent and contracts with, for example, doctors who complete, say, 5 or 10 years of contract services to be absorbed into a permanent post because they've demonstrated skill or loyalty or some other metric. So that could be a bit of a hybrid solution. We don't have to have all permanent or all contracts. We can certainly have a bit of a hybrid permanent and contract basis, but the right mix can be decided by policymakers without any internal contradictions. Finally, Suan is to say that where there is political will, we should be able to find the funds to pay for it. But ultimately, if the hiring decisions and contract posts and so on and so forth, right, are decided not within the Ministry of Health, this is a structural issue that we probably have to resolve. Otherwise, we're just kicking the problem down the road, and there could be future conversations, maybe even future strikes that will happen if we don't have a structural solution.
You know, you mentioned that we spend about 50 to 55% on salaries. Then what would be sort of the percentage that would be spent on salaries if if the Ministry of Health is sufficiently funded?
Wow, this is a great question, Suan, for which I don't have an answer. But I can think of, and I don't think there's any perfect answer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in different industries, for example, in the corporate sector, some people might think that the wage bill should be between 10 to 30, 10 to 40%. And that's healthy, but it depends on the industry. Are you in goods? Or are you in services? Are you in manufacturing, agriculture, and so on? So different industries will probably have different numbers for what constitutes a good ratio or a good percentage spent on salaries. But we can say that if 10% of your operating costs are spent on salaries, you must be turning a very healthy profit margin, or you're not paying your employees enough. Or if you're spending 90% on salaries, so that's probably you're paying them too much, or you're not earning enough of a profit. So the idea would probably be somewhere in the middle. Even if I have to guess at the number, you know, I probably shouldn't guess at a number because I don't know. But I'll give some guiding principles. The first guiding principle is to benchmark the pay of a doctor and other professionals in the public sector versus that of the private sector. And let me invent a number, 50 to 70% of that. The government doctor will never be able to earn as much as a private doctor. And that's a given. And people stay in government or go to private for different reasons. So we don't have to benchmark one-to-one, but we can benchmark a reasonable number. This is something that countries like Singapore does. The second guiding principle is to look at the percentage of salary versus healthcare access around Malaysia. What I mean to say is, if you're spending 50, 60% of your total Ministry of Health budget on salaries alone, there will be areas where you have to cut in terms of services. And if you're cutting services in order to fund salary, that's a sign that you're not spending enough as a whole for the Ministry of Health. So these two metrics could be used to find some sort of a way to determine the right wage bill for Ministry of Health in Malaysia.
Mm, all right. So then coming back to solutions, right, your suggestion was that we could have somewhat of a hybrid system. It's not all permanent positions, but a mix of permanent and contract. So would that then involve an extended 10-year contract, as you mentioned earlier?
Yes, it would. So not only must it involve more permanent posts, because 700 out of 23,000 permanent posts, right, is absolutely not adequate. We must have more permanent posts. But how many? This depends on the human resources for health, or what we call HRH planning, inside the Ministry of Health. And I trust the technocrats inside the Ministry of Health. They can use tools from the World Health Organization, something called WISN, or Workload Indicator of Staffing Needs. WISN is a model that can help you project how many doctors, nurses, paramedics, and so on that you need. So the point I'm making is we do need more permanent posts, but I don't have the actual numbers, nor have I done the projections about what's the ideal number, and I trust my technocrat colleagues to be able to do that. Not conversely, but separately, simultaneously, at the same time, in parallel, we need longer-term contracts, not the maximum 4 years, but why not max it out at 10? And at the end of 10 years, or two consecutive contracts of 10 years, will absorb you to become a permanent staff of the Ministry of Health. And it's not as if you create a permanent post that post stays with the person forever, because if the person does leave, then another person will be able to assume the permanent post. So it would be a combination of more permanent posts and longer term contracts with built in and very transparent and very clear guidelines for who gets to become a permanent post person. There is a third conversation over here about pensions and or EPF. And one of the demands of the Hartal Doctor Contract movement is to equalize the pension and EPF payments for permanent and contract staff, which I think is a good conversation to have and can be conducted in parallel to the discussion between permanent posts and contract posts.
Mm, all right. And just something I'm wondering about the 10 years of contract, right? Is there a possibility of us then losing out specialists to other sectors because, you know, they might have specialized by then, but at the end of the contract, then they choose to, they aren't retained in the public service?
It's absolutely possible. So there are two factors over here. One is the duration of the contract. So if we give it 10 years, 10 years is just an example. And it could be 8, it could be 12. I mean, who am I to say that it should be 10, right? But 10 is a nice round number, so I'm going to stick to that number. So we give them a 10-year contract. They will almost certainly finish their specialist training, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they finish their specialist training, the duration of their next contract is probably less important than their terms of service. And terms of service will be other things like not so much a duration of contract already, but their pay. there are ancillary benefits that are non-financial, whether or not they get EPF, and they get EPF to the tune of their specialist at a benchmark at an equal weight of seniority, and other factors, for example, like workplace satisfaction. It is true that many doctors in Ministry of Health are overworked, and there's quite a lot of bureaucracy. So the main reason why people leave for the private sector, right, is actually perhaps not higher salaries, but perhaps bureaucracy, as well as a lack of career progression, and money perhaps comes third. Now, here am I making a conjecture, Suan, that there are many people, many doctors in the private sector, they have multiple reasons and combinations of reasons for leaving the public sector, but salary isn't, say, the main priority for most of them, I would say. So anyway, to go back to your question, the retention of doctors beyond, for as long as possible, as a specialist, right, is more than just the length of the contract, but it's also the terms of the service and the conditions of the work.
All right. Please. So, and I guess generally now with the intense conditions that doctors are working, that healthcare workers are working in during the pandemic, you know, there have been seemingly increasing reports of doctors resigning and leaving the public service. That was something that the Hartau doctor contract organizers also brought up. And they said that it's due to burnout, but there have been no clear reasons by the Ministry of Health. But generally, should we be concerned about the impact of the pandemic on brain drain from the medical field?
We should absolutely be concerned in the short term and in the long term. The 140-something resignations over the past X number of months in Malaysia, I think is a bit of a symptom. If left unchecked, that we don't increase our manpower or rather human capital, the number of doctors, nurses, dentists, and so on in operation, they will be consistently faced with already 18 months. But how many more months are we going to give them 30-hour days of non-stop working and so on? So this is a superficial symptom of a larger problem of being chronically burned out and chronically overworked. So in the short term, hopefully we will be able to improve the conditions and help people stay and be at least having a reasonably high morale and spirits in the workplace. Okay, so this is in the short term. But in the long term, if we don't resolve issues for our healthcare workers in terms of making them, shall we say, more appreciated, more to boost their morale and boost their spirits and to give them fair and equal terms of service, then there could be an entire generation of young Malaysians, right, in secondary school and so on, who will grow up thinking, wow, being a doctor was all glamorous, I thought. But right now, we see that doctors in the front lines are striking. There are reports of burnout. People are resigning with 24 hours notice. Yeah, I'm going to go be a banker instead because I get 40 hours a week. I get a three times the salary of a doctor, things like that. So an entire generation of young secondary school students are watching the Malaysian health system and how we treat our health professionals.
All right. So then what long-term solutions would you most like to see being prioritized in order to better address the issue of the contract system?
So, and this is a very challenging question to answer because there are many factors that brought us to today. Mm-hmm. The situation where we had doctors striking, doctors resigning 24 hours and so on, chronically burned out across the health professions. There are many, many factors. I'll give a laundry list and arrive at what I think is an elegant yet very feasible solution. Mm-hmm. The other parts of it will be Malaysia has got more medical schools per capita than the US, UK, Canada, and Australia. I repeat that. We have more medical schools than these other countries combined on a per capita basis, of course. Why? Because we liberalize medical education. Everybody can become a doctor in the 1990s, and this carried on into the noughties as well. That gave rise to a situation where the Malaysian Medical Council approves over 300 foreign medical schools on top of our local medical schools. We've got 33 in Malaysia. We recognize another 300 around the world. In comparison, Singapore, the Singapore Medical Council, only recognizes about 100 or so. So when you have so many medical schools and therefore also schools of pharmacy, nursing, medical assistants, optometrists, and so on, there comes a situation where there's an oversupply of doctors. So there could be a need for us to consider a medical licensing examination similar to the Certificate of Legal Practice, or CLP, for you to become a lawyer in Malaysia, or the United States Medical Licensing Exam, or USMLE, for you to become a doctor in the US. Right now, there are no medical licensing exams, and this could be introduced as one way to reduce the, say, number of doctors coming into the system, but also separating, shall we say, the qualified ones from the unqualified ones. Mm-hmm. But that's only talking about doctors, and that's only talking about human capital. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it cannot be easily separated from other things, like how do we finance our health system? Because training doctors is one thing, you're going to have to pay them to retain them. And that requires a conversation about how we finance our health system. And to finance our health system, that requires a conversation about how much taxes are we going to apply on the Malaysian population. And that requires a conversation about the social contract. So if I pay more taxes, then I'm going to expect more healthcare. So the one solution for all this is to create a health reform commission by an act of parliament and invest it with powers for 10 years, after which it becomes a health commission. So health reform commission for 10 years and then becomes a health commission indefinitely. Mm-hmm. Why 10 years? I arbitrarily selected this because health reforms take a long time. They're not 1 or 2 years. We need a commission external to the Ministry of Health to guide the reforms within the Ministry of Health. Ministers come and go. The average health minister in Malaysia stays for 3.1 years in power. They spend a year learning the job, the second year building a reform, the third year trying to apply it, and then they're gone in the fourth year. So we need a commission that, shall we say, is semi-permanent. 10 years, surviving the comings and goings of this minister or that government, and then we'll be able to impose or guide the reforms necessary. 10 years is just a number. Mm-hmm. After which it becomes a health commission, where this health commission becomes like a securities commission, a police commission, or an energy commission, that it sets the standards and strategies for the whole country, including some human resources and human capital management. And what does the Ministry of Health do? Apply the standards and deliver services and deliver public health care services as well. So in a way, you're separating the function of the Ministry of Health. Currently, it's a provider, regulator, asset owner, as well as a payer. So you're separating the shall we say, the four conflicts of interest built in within the Ministry of Health as well. So a health reform commission would go a long way towards solving all the problems of Malaysia, and certainly will provide a little bit more permanency on the landscape.
All right. So then my final question circles back to the heart out to the walkouts that happened, right? Is it important for us to also then, in the midst of talks about reforms and challenges that junior doctors are facing, is it important to also ensure that they have a safe space to raise their concerns?
The walkouts that happened yesterday throughout Malaysia are an indication that the workspace is not safe for them. Mm-hmm. This is an employee-employer dispute, shall we say. And in there are rights and duties of the employees. In the case of the walkouts yesterday, it appears that most of the duties or all the duties have been met, that they didn't abandon their posts in ICU, that they did this in a very sophisticated, professional and calm manner. Mm-hmm. The walkout was conducted with professionalism and care for patients, with most reports indicating that it proceeded without any disturbance of patient care. And this is testament to the skill and the planning that the organizers have devoted in the walkout. But it also indicates that the workplace is not safe. And therefore, it is incumbent on the employer, in this case, the Malaysian government, to do what they can to improve the conditions in the workplace so that we never have to go through another strike again.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me, Sue King.
It's a pleasure, Sue, and thank you.
I've been speaking to independent health policy specialist Dr. Kaw Swee King about the future of contract doctors, as well as what solutions can be introduced to better address their concerns and ensure their job security and career progression. If you missed any part of today's show or you'd like to listen to other Live and Learn episodes, you can look them up at bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.